Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Buzzcut by Greta Boris, narrated by Amy Melissa Bentley. 1. The Hospital. The Feldman Sanatorium for Chronic Pain and Other Brain Disorders hovered over me like a kestrel. I had a mental image of the building sprouting wings, swooping down, plucking me off the sidewalk, and carrying me away to a private spot where it could tear me to shreds in peace. Stop it. I gave my head a small shake. It didn't pay to let my brain wander wherever it wanted these days. According to Elle, I'd been paranoid ever since I'd discovered a poltergeist was dogging my steps. He was right. Poltergeists have that effect on people. This is it, Elle said cheerfully. Too cheerfully. Really? I was hoping he'd put the wrong address into the GPS. Really? He took my hand and gave me a gentle pull toward the entrance. The inside is nicer than the outside. Good news. The interior couldn't be more gloomy than this dull brown and black facade. Elle must have been reading my mind. He was good at that. He said, they probably had to paint it those colors, historical accuracy and all that. Color schemes aside, I wasn't excited about this visit. I didn't like hospitals, even new, white, bright, shiny ones. Worse yet, we were going to visit Elle's mother. Again, he read my mind. I really appreciate you coming to see Mom with me. Elle climbed the porch and towed me after him. I know you and she didn't hit it off. Didn't hit it off was an understatement. Eleanor Brown wasn't subtle about the fact that she wanted me out of her son's life. As we approached the house, I noted the top half of the front doors framed in elaborate stained glass image. A monk tending roses stood in the foreground. Bees buzzed around him. I wondered if the monk was the patron saint of something, but had no time to ask. Elle opened a door and hurried inside, talking over his shoulder. She asked to see you. I reluctantly followed. Me? Yes, you. He gave my hand a squeeze. She wants to thank you. I'd learned a few things after bumbling into yet another murderer's path recently, and suggested the medicine Eleanor was taking for her migraines might have been the cause of other disturbing symptoms she was experiencing. I was right. She stopped taking the pills and the symptoms went away. Unfortunately, the migraines returned. Hence the reason we were visiting her today at the Feldman Sanatorium. That's not necessary, I mumbled. Elle strode to a tall, dark wood reception desk situated near a curved staircase. A woman who took her fashion cues from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest stood behind it. Hair, sticky with spray, framed her unsmiling face. An outdated, starched white uniform covered a spine that might have been constructed from titanium. We're here to see Eleanor Brown. Elle flashed a disarming smile at her, to no effect. Interesting. Most people melted in the warmth of that smile. Not her. I gazed around as the nurse checked the computer. The room we occupied had graceful, curved lines. I saw an arched doorway just past the stairs, and through it, a series of rooms, each painted a different color. The first was gold, the next celery green, then maroon. Past that, all I could see were windows. Several other doorways opened off the reception area. I assumed they also led to their own lineup of rooms, like the limbs of a starfish. The sanatorium had been built by Roger Humboldt, a wealthy landowner, back in the early 1900s. It was a ridiculously large home for a family of five, but that's what the rich did with their money in those days. These days too, I guess. Humans feel the need to dress to impress, which often extends to their abodes, probably due to their lack of fur and feathers. Nurse Ratched, whose name tag read Nadine, tightened her already tight lips as if what she was about to say was distasteful. She's in room 22. Thank you. Elle patted the desk and moved toward the stairs. I gripped the handrail tightly as we ascended, something that had become second nature the past month. Stairs, balconies, cliffs, any place with altitude were especially terrifying when a poltergeist was plaguing you. It only took one stumble, one invisible push, and poof, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, as the funeral saying goes. The second floor of the sanatorium wasn't as well turned out as the first. The stairs led to a community room in which a TV blared Wheel of Fortune. One lone woman sat with her back to us on a nubby old couch, watching it. This room was round, similar to the entryway on the ground floor. It also had five hallways branching off it. Elle paused, glanced at each opening, and rubbed his chin. "The one on the right?" I suggested. He gave a half shrug and headed in that direction. There were six rooms in the right-hand hall, numbered 1 through 6. We returned to the community room and tried the next hallway. If Feldman Sanatorium had a logical layout, the next series of rooms would have been 7 through 12, but they weren't. They were numbered 10 to 16, which made no sense at all. The next corridor held rooms 7 through 9 and 17 through 19. Elle's brow furrowed in frustration when he returned to the community room. Who numbered these things? Maybe we should ask her where 22 is. I nodded at the woman on the couch, still obviously engrossed in her game show. There are only 5 hallways, he said. Let's not bother her. Your mother's room could be on the next floor. He opened his mouth to argue, but I'd stopped listening. I didn't want to search the entire building for Eleanor, and it wasn't because I was lazy. I felt like I was invading people's privacy. The first hall we'd walked down, there'd been a white-haired woman laid out on her bed asleep, mouth wide open. Down the second, a man sat in a window staring at the world with such a look of defeat on his face, I felt as if I'd seen into his soul, and it wasn't pretty. Wandering around just didn't seem right. I stood behind the couch, so I couldn't see the face of the woman who sat there. She might be dozing, but I decided to take a chance. "Excuse me," I said. She didn't respond, so I raised my voice. "Excuse me?" Still no response. Maybe she was hard of hearing. As I approached the couch, the scent of lilacs washed over me. Since I saw no flowers, I assumed it must be a favorite hand cream of the woman's seated there. "Excuse me," I said for a third time, but she didn't turn. I placed a hand on her shoulder, brushing aside the salt and pepper hair that lay there in messy tangles, and gave her a gentle shake. That turned out to be a big mistake. 2. DOA. The next thing I knew, a surge of anxiety rose inside me, and the fingers of my right hand twitched violently. "Imogene," Elle sounded concerned. "Are you all right?" I gave myself a mental once-over and blinked twice. "Yeah, I think so." "What happened?" "I don't know." But I was afraid I did. I stared at Elle. "Where is she?" I whispered. "She?" "The woman on the couch," I whispered, although I was fairly sure she wouldn't have heard me if I'd shouted. A startled expression crossed his face when he saw, or didn't see, the woman in question. She'd fallen over and disappeared from view. Elle bent over the back of the couch and grew very still. A drumbeat started in my chest and traveled to my neck. "Is she?" I couldn't finish the question. Elle cleared his throat. "Excuse me, ma'am." His gaze returned to mine, and I could tell by his somber expression it wasn't a good turn of events. Blood rushed to my head. I blinked a few times to try to clear my vision and followed the direction of Elle's gaze. I saw what I'd been fearing. The woman lay on her side where she'd fallen, hair covering her face. She was still, unmoving. "She's dead, isn't she?" "Looks like it," Elle said. I hadn't really needed to ask. I could tell by the new sensations racing through me, nervousness and a strange hollow feeling, that she was gone. "Damn it!" I'd never have touched her if I'd known. It's not that I have an aversion to the dead. On the contrary, they're some of my favorite people. I'm assistant to the head embalmer at Greener Pastures Mortuary and in school to become a full-fledged mortician. The dearly departed are much easier to deal with than my old clientele at Harry's Hair Stop. Most of the time. However, I have what some people refer to as a gift. I feel the final sensations of the deceased when I touch their hair. Depending on their mode of departure, this can be fleeting, lasting only an hour or two, if they died peacefully. If, on the other hand, they were murdered, I was in for it. Their spirit wouldn't leave me alone until their killer was revealed. Consequently, I was usually very careful about hair touching. It was probably natural causes, Elle said. Right? I gestured to our surroundings. We were in a hospital, after all. He glanced at our friend on the couch again. We should tell someone. Definitely. But neither of us moved until a cry made us jump. Becky? A pretty blonde-haired woman in scrubs emerged from one of the hallways. Becky! She exclaimed again, then turned her gaze on us. What happened? I don't know.
She just fell over.
Elle and I spoke at the same time. The nurse fumbled in her pocket and pulled out a small black device that looked like an old-fashioned pager. After punching a button on its surface, she narrowed her eyes at us. And you're just standing there? I think it's too late, I began. But she ignored me and darted to Becky's side, waving Elle and me away like we were mosquitoes. She pushed the woman's hair from her face and placed two fingers on her jugular. I tried to tell her it was no use, but she wasn't interested in my opinion. A moment later, a lanky man raced into the room with a crash cart. Elle and I retreated to the stairs. I expected him to go down, but he climbed them two at a time. I had to jog to keep up. What are we doing? I panted when we reached the top.
I wanted to get out of the way. Besides, this is as good a place as any to look for Mom.
I gazed around at the room we were standing in and begged to disagree. While the second floor might not have been as luxurious as the first, it was at least presentable. The space we now found ourselves in looked like a set for The Shining. Either the light bulbs needed to be changed, or the electrical system needed an update, because the light from the wall sconces flickered yellow. The gloom didn't hide the cobwebs hanging from the fixtures, or the warped wooden flooring, or the brown stains on the once white walls, however. And I could see five doorways yawning darkly around the dingy space. I don't think she's on this floor, I spoke softly, but my voice rang off the bare walls.
No, Elle said. I don't think so either. This floor is off limits.
A voice, gravelly and deep, echoed from somewhere to our right. We spun to find its source. A man materialized from a darkened corridor. He was heavyset, a thick 5 o'clock shadow that a male model on the cover of a romance novel couldn't have made attractive covered his white face. His blue uniform was dirty. Based on that and the broom in his hand, I guessed he was the janitor. A frisson of nerves washed over me as I took him in. I wasn't sure if they were my nerves, rule-breaking always made me uncomfortable, or if poor Becky was still hanging around. A faint scent of lilacs permeated the air.
We're looking for room 22.
Elle used the tone he saved for awkward situations, polite, yet laced with a hint of self-deprecating humor. It usually worked like a charm, but just as with Nurse Ratchet at the entrance, it had no effect.
It's not up here.
The janitor's voice was expressionless. Elle's tone shifted from self-deprecating to irritated.
Well, can you tell me where-
I grabbed his arm and spoke over him. We'll go now. Elle stiffened.
I just want to know where-
Thanks. I gave the janitor a wave with my free hand. I'm sure we'll find it. I yanked Elle toward the stairs.
Imogene?
He allowed himself to be guided down, but I could feel the tension in his biceps. They were very nice biceps, and I usually didn't mind feeling them tighten, but not now.
My parents are paying a small fortune for this place, he said through gritted teeth.
I know, I said. We'll find her. I wasn't sure that was true, but the whole experience,
Flickering lights, spider webs, and creepy janitor had made me uncomfortable. The second floor was now a hive of activity. Men and women in pajamas and sweatsuits huddled around the perimeter of the community room. Some stood straight, but others hung onto oxygen machines or sat in wheelchairs. A second man in scrubs had joined the lanky one and the blonde nurse. This one was built like a French bulldog. All three hovered around the shrouded body of Becky. "Mom!" Elle cried and darted across the space to a small, thin woman in a Lululemon sweatsuit. Eleanor looked paler and thinner than the last time I'd seen her. Lines that hadn't been there before creased her forehead.
"Elle, darling!"
She held out her arms to her son, and he walked into them. It was a heartwarming scene. At least, it would have been if I didn't know Eleanor.
"Let's all go back to our rooms now."
The tall man began shooing patients into the hallways. Eleanor and Elle moved slowly out of my line of vision, apparently forgetting my existence. The hollow feeling I'd experienced earlier came back with a vengeance. This was definitely Becky. I might be insecure around Eleanor, but not that insecure. I was about to follow them when I noticed the white-haired woman Elle and I had seen napping earlier. She stood in a doorway, unmoving. "What happened to Becky?" She directed her question to the French bulldog in scrubs. He moved toward her, took her arm, and turned her toward her room.
"We'll let you know when we know."
He spoke as if addressing a child, even though the white-haired woman had spoken clearly and with intelligence. Her forehead puckered with irritation.
"Becky Riddell wasn't sick. She was compulsive. That's not life-threatening."
"I know, Hilda, but she wasn't a young woman."
He herded her toward the hallway.
"I'm sure the doc will get to the bottom of it."
The bulldog's attitude was insulting. Whatever the brain disorders being treated at the sanatorium were, I doubted they included dementia. Eleanor wouldn't have signed up for that. She had migraines, and besides being a little irrational when it came to her son, she was as bright as he was.
Eleanor.
I closed my eyes and inhaled and exhaled, summoning the strength to face her. When I opened them again, my gaze fell on a teacup sitting on the coffee table near the dead woman. It was a nice cup. China. Not the kind of thing usually found in a hospital. I couldn't take my eyes off it. I wanted it. Don't ask me why, but the fingers of my right hand twitched with longing. As I passed the couch on my way to Eleanor's room, I glanced at the only staff member left in the common area. It was the pretty blonde. Her eyes were trained on a tablet she was punching data into. She wasn't looking at me. Then I did something completely out of character. I reached down, snagged the cup and saucer from the table, and buried them under my sweater. I hurried after Elle, shocked by my own behavior. 3. Mommy Dearest. Eleanor's room showcased the elegant bones of the Victorian mansion. The ceiling was high and rimmed with decorative molding, and the windows were tall and graceful. However, it was clear the renovation process wasn't finished. The wood floors needed polishing, the walls were dingy white, and the furniture looked like it had been purchased from a second-hand hospital warehouse. I stood in the doorway, surveying the scene inside. Eleanor sat on the edge of her metal bed. Elle had pulled up the only chair close enough to hold her hands. A shaft of sunlight illuminated them. They made quite the picture. The lovely, aging mother with her virile, handsome son. I'd never realized how much they looked alike with their dark blonde hair, wide blue eyes, and strong jawlines. Even their names were similar, Eleanor and Elmore. They were so deep in conversation, they didn't appear to notice my presence. I dropped the teacup I'd pinched into my overlarge purse, then cleared my throat. Both faces pivoted toward me. Eleanor's wore a polite smile. Elle's broke into a grin. The resemblance between them vanished.
"There you are," Elle said.
"Here I am," I said cheerfully.
"Mom was just saying how glad she was that you came."
Elle looked at Eleanor for confirmation.
She paused for a long moment, then said, "Yes." The silence that followed that one word was so extended, I wondered if it was my turn to talk. Finally, she broke it. "I feel I owe you a debt of thanks." "No." I stepped from the doorway into the room. "You don't." Eleanor held up a hand. "But I do. If it wasn't for you, I might have wandered into the street or into a ditch or..." She shook her head. The medicine her prior doctor had prescribed for her migraines had the nasty side effect of causing her to walk in her sleep. When I'd spent the night at the Brown Ranch, I'd discovered her wandering between the grapevines, dangerously close to the main road. "Glad I could help," I said. She sighed deeply. "However, it seems I've jumped from the frying pan into the fire." I wasn't sure what she meant by that. Phil, my grandmother's husband, would know. He was a cliche machine, but he wasn't here to interpret. "How's that?" "Well." Her lips curved upward in an unpleasant smile. "My migraines have come back with blinding force. I don't know which is worse, sleepwalking or the headaches." In other words, thanks for nothing. Eleanor had a talent for extracting the lemons from the lemonade. "I'm sorry." It was all I could think to say. I was sorry her migraines had returned, but I wasn't sorry I'd told her about the potential side effects of her prescription. She might have been hit by a truck. As tempting as that sounded, I have scruples. "So," Al said, "tell us about Dr. Feldman's prognosis. How are things going here?" Eleanor's hand fluttered to her forehead. "I don't know, Al, darling. Your father thinks the world of him, but..." She flashed a martyr's smile. "The jury is still out." "You don't have confidence in him?" Al seemed surprised. "He has..." She tipped her head to one side. "Unusual ideas." Al's brow furrowed with concern. "Unusual how?" I took a few more steps into the room and leaned against the dresser. I found medical discussions fascinating. Granted, the mortuary business wasn't exactly in the health industry, but it was related. "Dr. Feldman is doing experiments with insect serums." "Insect serums?" I pushed off the dresser. I'd had a nasty experience with beetles about 5 months ago. Insects and I weren't on great terms. "What kind of insects?" Eleanor gazed at me with surprise. I think she might have forgotten I was there. "Bees, I believe." My shoulders relaxed, curiosity returning now that I knew it wasn't beetles. "What does he do with them?" "How would I know? I'm not a medical professional," she snapped. I folded my arms across my chest and leaned on the dresser again. "That's what I got for trying to engage." "Now, Mom," Elle's tone was soothing. "Imogene is interested, being in the business and all." "I certainly hope I don't need her services anytime soon," Eleanor sniffed. She said her as if I weren't there, and I'm sure she wished I wasn't. "That's not what I meant," Elle said. "I know, dear." She patted his hand. "Let's not argue. I get an injection once a day. Your father said it has something to do with insects. That's all I know." Eleanor hadn't really wanted to thank me. She was just trying to appease her son. She hated the idea that her son was dating a future mortician. Some people are superstitious about the death industry. I learned that the first time I darkened the door of Greener Pastures. A client from the hair salon I worked for at the time had died and left a note asking that I do her hair and makeup for the funeral. I did such a good job, none of our living clients wanted to work with me anymore. I'm not sure what they were afraid of, but I've since learned believing in the mortician's curse isn't uncommon. Irritation pricked up my spine, and the emptiness and anxiety I'd felt since touching Becky seemed to be getting worse. I was ready to leave both Eleanor and the unhappy spirit behind. Like her son, it seemed Eleanor could read my mind. She lifted her chin toward the community room. "What happened out there? How did poor Becky die?" A guilty look crossed Elle's face. "We don't know. Imogene just put..." I wanted to ask where your room was, I interrupted. I was sure that somehow Eleanor would blame me for poor Becky's death if she heard I'd touched her. But she... I searched for the right word. Passed, I finally said. Eleanor raised one eyebrow. Must be where Elle inherited that talent. I'd always been envious of it. She was already dead? Yes. The word came out more defensively than I'd intended. She humphed and repeated her earlier question. How did she die? It was my turn to snap. How should I know? I'm not a medical professional. Elle rose from his chair so quickly he almost knocked it over. It was great seeing you, Mom. You're leaving so soon? She almost whined. We've both got to get to work. He leaned toward her. I wish you'd hurry up and graduate so you can leave that terrible place, she said, turning her cheek to him. He dutifully kissed it. It's not a terrible place, and I'm getting close. Last semester, and I can apply for the academy. That will be a wonderful day. She turned her gaze to me. Thank you for coming, Imogene. Something in her tone led me to believe once was enough. I didn't need to make a return trip, which was totally okay with me. You're welcome, I said. Elle glared at me, but I turned and stomped into the hallway. The couch in the community room was empty when we got there. I hadn't heard the ambulance or seen an emergency vehicle through the window, but I hadn't expected to. Older people who died in hospitals were rarely autopsied, so there was no reason to take her to the county morgue. Most likely, there was a cold room somewhere on the premises where they kept patients until a local funeral parlor could pick them up. That went pretty well, Elle said when he caught up to me. I stared at him. Elle was one of the most thoughtful, intelligent, intuitive people I knew, except when it came to his mother. For her, he had a 5'3", 130-pound blind spot. You think? I said. He shrugged. It could have been worse. I couldn't argue with that, so I headed to the stairs. Elle was oblivious. It might not seem like Mom is grateful, but she is, he said, proving my point. I'd learned not to argue with him about his mother. She has a hard time showing her feelings. That was patently untrue. I knew exactly how Eleanor felt about me. I hummed again. You're winning her over, Im, I can tell. He was living in a fantasy world. When we reached the ground floor, I breathed a sigh of relief. The day had turned warm while we were inside. Sunshine was very welcome after the chill of the sanatorium. As Elle put the pickup into gear, I relaxed into the bucket seat. I'd visited my boyfriend's mother. I'd done my duty. Thankfully, I'd never have to see the Feldman Sanatorium again. It wasn't until I reached greener pastures and I slipped out of the truck that I realized my optimism might have been premature. The scent of lilacs wafted across the parking lot toward me. My gut yawned emptily, and my fingers twitched. As I walked into the mortuary, the unthinkable crept into my mind. I'd give it an hour, but if I wasn't free of the strange sensation by then, I'd have to face the fact that someone had killed poor Becky. 4. A New Friend. The flight down into Death Valley, our affectionate term for the basement of Greener Pastures, seemed endless in my uneasy state. The chill of the tiled walls and floors crept into my bones. I heard Alfonso's club music before I reached the door to the embalming room. He loved to blare it while he worked, claiming it inspired him. It gave me a headache. We'd come to a compromise. I'd put up with the club music if he'd turn the volume down. However, I wasn't officially in yet, so when I pushed open the heavy metal door, I ran into a wall of sound. Alfonso was bent over an elderly man, inserting embalming machine tubes into him. This used to give me the heebie-jeebies, but I was adjusting. I'd have to if I was going to become a mortician. In fact, I'd be taking Embalming 101 next semester. I wasn't looking forward to it. The practice was becoming less common as green burials were...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?